This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Frida Liu. You're listening to Her Vantage and Enterprise, and this is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. Now, when you think about leading entrepreneurs, you tend to look to the West and think about Steve Jobs, Mark Zuckerberg, and Jeff Bezos. But there are plenty of successful entrepreneurs to learn from here in Asia. And today we're speaking to Karen Lam, the woman who compiled all this knowledge into her book, Power Talk. Now, lovely to have you back on BFM. So, Karen, last time we spoke was in 2010, okay? Of course, this is with your company, Word Communication, where, you know, we discuss conflict and difficult discussions. Today, not so difficult, okay? We're discussing a different kind of discussion, the interviews you had with Asia's leading entrepreneurs. I'll give a bit of background behind this. Of course, this is from the TV series Powerlist Asia that came out on Channel News Asia, right? So now this book that you have, Power Talk, what led to this, you know, having done all the interviews and then finally compiling this book?
It's a responsibility. I mean, I know that sounds quite noble, but it isn't. It really just is a sense that, you know, I've been blessed to have this treasury of stories from 72 of the largest, of the biggest entrepreneurs throughout Asia. We're talking about Mongolia to Myanmar, if you're talking about, you know, countries from Kathmandu to Kuala Lumpur. And I've got this breadth and to some extent the depth of information and stories. And it'd be a pity to just let it go, because with television, you know, it can be very momentary. You know, at most you can save it somewhere in a podcast or YouTube. But otherwise, you know, it comes and it goes, and in half an hour after the show ends, that's it. So I wanted to give these stories that have been entrusted to me, to give it some sense of permanence, and that really is all there is to it. I can definitely tell you one thing, which my publisher said to me from day one: you're not going to make any money from writing books, and so it is definitely not for monetary reasons. It really just is, you know, just giving permanence.
And of course, we're launching the book today.
We are.
We're very fortunate to have you here in the studio as well. Now, so I want to talk a little bit about how this lasted six seasons, and how many years was that?
It was about 5 years, so five plus years of running the show. I mean, it was quite an interesting journey, because it really just started with Deborah Soon, who was at that time the managing director of Channel News Asia, and who was an ex-colleague of mine. We worked together back in the day when we first started. So Deborah invited me back to host the show, and at that time, and I still am, running this company called WordCom, which is a training and consultancy company, and I was busy enough with work there. And when she suggested that I host the show, I thought she was out of her mind, because I hadn't done this for about 15 years. I hadn't been on television for 15 years, and definitely not of this particular genre. I've always been in the news. I've read the news. I've presented the news. I've reported as a broadcast journalist, but not in an interview format. So it's a different kettle of fish altogether, and I wasn't sure I wanted to do that. Yeah, you know, she invited me in the show, and I said, at first I said no, because it was my plate was already full. But she said, look, it's only just for one season, just for the advertisers. And I thought, okay, fine, one season, doable. One season leads to the other, And you know, really, there are no regrets. It's been a whirlwind and totally, totally fun.
So 73 entrepreneurs. Are there anything, I'm sure, you know, we've heard of our Western entrepreneurs, and is there anything that's different about us in Asia, or some things are just universal?
Well, we're talking about what's different. I think it's just the fact that we, in Asia, we work within such volatility. Yeah. And when we talk about Asia, you have to realize It's a wide expanse of land, of peoples, of cultures. So, you know, we have to be very, very specific when we deal with this thing called Asia. Mm-hmm. The West can look at us and we say Asia, but no, you know, I'm Singaporean, you're Malaysian, we're Southeast Asian, you know, and the people over there are East Asian and the old people over there are West. So, and we understand how different we are. So it is about the volatility. It is about adapting. It's about being able to maneuver your way through, you know, the political, the economic, and the social vicissitudes that the region presents. So that's what's different. But in terms of what's the same, I'd say it is about the grit. You know, I don't particularly look too much for success stories as I do for failures, because I think that is what defines a person, because failure will come your way. That is a given. But the question is, how do you get out of these failures, become a success thereafter?
How many did you feature in your book?
I think I featured 20, 23, a little over 20. So these are just really just the tip of the iceberg.
And in terms of writing the book, to research and structure all these stories, you know, what was that like, you know, for you? How long did that take?
It took me 3 years. I started it in 2015 thinking it was just, you know, you kind of want to put down some thoughts, as they say, which I did. I typed it down rather than penned it down. And it just started off with the thought. And as they say, you know, the thought grows into something else and grows into something else. And then it becomes a bigger and bigger thing. And by the time I realized that I couldn't turn back anymore, which is when the publishers, different people started coming into the you know, the project. That was when I realized people have sunk money into this project and I can't turn back. And I think that's actually a great way to make sure that you end a project. I always remember the story that Tan Hui Ling of Grab, she's featured in the book, that she told me about how she started with Grab back in Harvard Business School when they were studying there together, and they came up with this idea of a ride hailing service, and they said, you know, they realized that this was a great idea, but it was too tempting to drop the idea for something else. So they realized that in order to really see it to the end, they had to get money, they had to get investors, they had to get input from consultants to come in to be a part of the project. Mm. I think that's a great lesson to learn, because you know for writing the book or with any other business, it's always easy to start it, but it's very difficult to get it to execution. It's very difficult to get it to market. And one way you can, as an entrepreneur, make sure that you take it through is just to make sure that you're not alone on this journey. You make sure that you are accountable to different people who will then, you know, make sure that you end it.
Yeah, I wanted to ask as well, you know, from the 73, was there a large percentage of women featured?
Boardroom representation, I would put it that way. I mean, I remember a friend of mine whose young daughter would watch my show, and every time, and he told me that she would tell him, How is it that Auntie Karen never interviews women? But no, it's that's not true. We do have boardroom representation. I think we have about 20% are women, and you know, it really depends. Like I said,
and even if you get the 20%, I think that's just the way it is, right? I mean, the numbers are such that it's not that you for lack of trying. It's just the way the numbers are, and hopefully that will change, right? We'll talk a little bit more about the book after this. I'm here with Karen Lam talking about her book Power Talk. Stay tuned to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. If you're just joining us, this is Her Vantage and Enterprise, where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with Karen Lam talking about her book, Power Talk, where she's compiled people that she's interviewed. And this was a show that came out on Channel News Asia called Power List Asia. So now the book is split into categories like the pioneers, East Goes West, and leaders, communicator. Why did you decide to split the book into these sort of categories? What did you see from all these people?
When we produce a show that is seasonal, that runs through 12 episodes, and we have to churn out an episode each week. You don't really have the luxury of choice because you're dealing with the big wigs here. Number one, it's got to do with their time. It's got to do with their availability. Yeah. And it's got to do with our filming schedule as well. It's got to do with their gender, you know, what issues they have in that particular season and if they even want to talk about that. So it's a confluence of events that come together to bring particular people on the show every week. And so what we have sometimes is a hodgepodge of different types of entrepreneurs, different industries coming together. And so what I felt after six seasons of the show, looking back at the list of people that I've spoken with, is that, hey, you know, I realize that there are themes to pull out from the different ones that I've talked to. And these are themes that I think are worth talking about and expounding on, and not just having one person talk about it. But like, for instance, you know, if we're going to talk about East Coast West, about Eastern, about Asian companies moving westward rather than, you know, the other way around, as has always been, Western companies coming over and making their presence known in Asia. There are many Asian companies that have done it big time over in the West. And I thought, hey, you know, I've got this list of entrepreneurs that I've interviewed who come from these companies. We talk about your homegrown company, huge in the UK, what with Wessex Water, as with the utilities company that they own, on top of many hotel properties as well. So that's one. And we talk about Kumar Birla from India, from the Aditya Birla Group. Huge. They made an acquisition over in the US that was of a steel company called Novelis, and it's like, it was a price tag of $6 billion. They bought the company, made it a success that it is. So and one of the stories that I particularly enjoy is the one on Tony Low running Giant Bicycles back over in Taiwan, and how he made a little known brand in Taiwan big. Today, you know, Giant Bicycles are seen in the Tour de France and bicycle marathons there are. So it's exciting to see the charge that these Asian companies are making into the West. So to be able to have these themes and have them expounded on by various entrepreneurs who've been there, done that.
And I think this book is really timely as well. Do you also find that a lot of times, right, we're not very good at blowing our own trumpet, which is, you know what I mean? Because you'll hear, like I said, the Elon Musk, the Mark Zuckerbergs, the Steve Jobs, and we've got great stories here. But I don't know if it's this, like, you know, an Asian thing, you know, don't show off. I you know, is that also to our detriment?
I think you're spot on. In the book, I talked about leaders as communicators. And, you know, I mean, you would know as well, because you produce a show, a weekly show, and sometimes you run daily shows as well. To get people on the program can sometimes be tough, and to get good people. And every time we send these invitations out, it's hard. It's hard to get the big names, largely because, you know, they don't need the publicity. Because in this day and age where products are differentiated, there is so little differentiation between products. At the end of the day, what moves the heart moves the hand. And what do we want? What moves the heart? It's not the product. It's the people that move the product. It's the faces. And it's an untapped opportunity for many Asian leaders.
You mentioned in the introduction to your book is that when talking about entrepreneurship, you found yourself necessarily falling short of casting more specific themes. Lessons can collectively expound upon. So what are some of the, is there an overarching theme or lesson you discovered through the process of writing this book?
Well, the themes specifically are, as I have stated in the various sections of the book, there are several themes. I talked about the pioneers, and those are the people that are in their late 70s, 80s, if not 90s. And you've got the people, I've got themes on succession. That's something that we talk a lot about nowadays, because in Asia we've come, our business environment has matured to the extent that we're starting to see second, third generations taking over the business, family businesses. And that's a big issue to tackle. So I cover the issue of succession and things like developing local brands. I touch on developing local brands, particularly for the F&B business in India, in Indonesia, and how they grow these businesses. Because brand building is, again, something quite new to us, because we've always acquired brands. We've always, you know, used the brands of people from the West, or companies from the West, rather than own our own brand.
Right. I mean, we've got great success stories. We've got our Grab. We've got our Air Asia. You know what I mean? We've got great success stories as well. I'm going to put you in the spot, Ruf. All the leaders you write about in Power Talk, which story resonated? Was there a favorite, you know? Was that, I know you talk about Tony from with the giant bicycles and all that. Was there one that, other than that, that resonated with you?
I'm going to give you a response to that question the way that my guests often give, the kind of response that they often give. When I ask them, especially those who run conglomerates, and I ask them which business do they particularly enjoy the most, and they'll always say, you can't ask me that question. It's like asking me to choose my favorite child. But what I can say is that there have been moments that have stood out. And if there is one factor that makes these moments for me very special, it's when the guard of my guests drops, when we speak candidly, when, you know, we speak heart to heart. And I remember in particular the interview with Francis Yeo of YTL. I mean, we all know, we in the media know that, you know, Francis and Tan Sri is someone who doesn't hold back when he believes in something. So as the conversation wore on, he began to drop his guard and he started to talk about the final days of his late wife. Something, and he said that, you know, he's never made this public before, but he talked about how he would spend that time with her, listening to her, and all this while he'd always been the one talking, and he learned, as he said, to shut up and to listen to her. And he talked about how lucid she was in those final moments, you know, which nephew and which niece to give which jewelry to. And, you know, and that lucidity and how much he enjoyed just listening to her. And he gave her one promise before she died. He said to her that he would never marry again. And he said that she smiled when she heard that. Not because it was for her, but she said it would be important for their children at that point, because when she passed away, the youngest, Rebecca, was 13. So he wanted to remain faithful to the memory for their children, I suppose. And so that was very touching. And those are times when, you know, you realize that when you speak to a person heart to heart, you're not talking about an interview anymore. You're talking about an intimate conversation. And that's been entrusted to me, and that's something that I value and something that I'm very careful and respectful of.
Okay, so of course, you know, I and of course that comes in with your role as a media consultant and all that. When you look at all this, were they some new lessons for you in when you wear your other hat as a media consultant?
I suppose it's the issue of, you know, having been on the inside as a series producer for the show and being on the outside as a media consultant, I can say that, you know, leaders, if you're listening to the show, you've really got to put on the hat of a communicative leader. Liu Manliang, who's the chairman of Changi Airport, said, you know, there is no such thing as an uncommunicative leader. Because that is a part of your portfolio, and that's often very much relegated in many leaders' to-do list to the end or to the bottom of the list. It is an untapped, as I mentioned before, it is an untapped opportunity, because when you can and you do learn, and communication is a learned skill.
Right.
It is not something that you're born with. For some of us, for some of them, rather, I'm not one of those who's born with communication skills, but you learn it along the way, and it is possible to learn it. And when you do, I think the kind of mileage that you can actually get for your product, for your company, and ultimately for your people, goes way beyond what, you know, advertising dollars alone can do for you.
All right. Where can people get hold of the book?
In any major bookstores throughout Malaysia.
All right. Thanks for being with us. I don't want to wait for another 8 years before we speak again. Karen Lam here with us talking about her book, Power Talk. You've been listening to Her Vantage and Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.